Page 26. Clara's Day. Part 1.
When Clara Tilling was 15 and a half, she took off all her clothes one morning in school assembly. She walked naked through the lines of girls, past the headmistress at her lectern and the other staff ranged behind her, and out into the entrance lobby. She had left off her bra and pants already, so that all she had to do was unbutton her blouse, remove it and drop it to the floor, and then undo the zipper of her skirt and let that fall. She slipped her feet out of her shoes at the same time, and so walked barefoot as well as naked. It all happened very quickly. One or two people giggled, and a sort of rustling noise ran through the assembly hall like a sudden wind among trees. The head hesitated for a moment. She was reading out the tennis team list, and then went on again firmly. Clara opened the big glass doors and let herself out. The entrance lobby was empty. The floor was highly polished, and she could see her own reflection, a foreshortened pink blur. There was a big, bright modern painting on one wall and several comfortable chairs for waiting parents, arranged around an enormous rubber plant and ashtrays on chrome stalks. Clara had sat there herself once with her mother, waiting for an interview with the head. She walked along the corridor to her form room, which was also quite empty, with thick gold bars of sunlight falling on the desks and a peaceful feeling, as though no one had been here for a long time nor ever would come. Clara opened the cupboard in the corner, took out one of the science overalls and put it on, and then sat down at her desk. After about a minute, Mrs. Mayhew came in carrying her clothes and her shoes. She said, "I should put these on now, Clara," and stood beside her while she did so. "Would you like to go home?" she asked. And when Clara said that she wouldn't, thank you, Mrs. Mayhew went on briskly, "Right you are then, Clara. You'd better get on with some prep then, till the first period." All morning, people kept coming up to her to say, "Well done," or just to pat her on the back. She was a celebrity, right up till dinner time, but after that it tailed off a bit. Halfway through the morning, one of the prefects came in and told her the head wanted to see her straight after school. The head study was more like a sitting room, except for the big paper-strewn desk that she sat behind. There were squashy chairs and nice pictures on the walls, and photos of the head's husband and her children on the mantelpiece, and a Marks and Spencer carrier bag dumped down in one corner. The window was open onto the playing fields, from which came the cheerful, incomprehensible noise, like birds singing, of people calling to each other. Except for the distant rumble of traffic, you wouldn't think you were in London. The head was busy writing when Clara came in. She just looked up to say, "Hello, Clara, sit down. Do you mind if I just finish these reports off? I won't be a minute." She went on writing, and Clara sat and looked at the photo of her husband, who had square, sensible-looking glasses, and her three boys, who were all the same but different sizes. Then the head slapped the pile of reports together and pushed her chair back. "There. Well, now. So what was all that about this morning?"
"I don't know," said Clara.
The head looked at her thoughtfully, and Clara looked back. Just before the silence became really embarrassing, the head pushed a hand through her short, untidy fair hair, making it even untidier, and said, "I dare say you don't. Were you trying to attract attention?" Clara considered.
"Well, I would, wouldn't I, doing a thing like that? I mean, you'd be bound to."
The head nodded.
"Quite a silly question."
"Oh, no," said Clara hastily. "I meant you'd be bound to attract attention, not be bound to be trying to."
The head, a linguist, also considered.
"Well, that's a fine point, I think. How do you feel about it now?"
Clara tried to examine her feelings, which slithered away like fish. In the end, she said, "I don't really feel anything," which was, in a way, truthful. The head nodded again. She looked at her husband on the mantelpiece, almost as though asking for advice. "Everything all right at home?"
"Oh, fine," Clara assured her. "Absolutely fine."
"Good," said the head. "Of course, I was just thinking, there are quite a lot of people in 4B with separated parents, aren't there? Bryony and Susie Talents and Rachel."
"And Midge," said Clara. "And Lucy Potter."
"Yes, six with you."
25%, said Clara. "Just about."
"Quite. As a matter of fact, that's the national average, did you know? One marriage in four."
"No, I didn't actually," said Clara.
"Well, it is, I'm afraid. Anyway," she looked over at her husband again, "you're not fussing about O-levels, are you?"
"Not really," said Clara. "I mean, I don't like exams, but I don't mind as much as some people."
"Your mocks were fine," said the head. "Physics and chemistry could have been a bit better, but there shouldn't be any great problems there, so... Are you still going around with Liz Raymond?"
"Mostly," said Clara. "And Stephanie."
"I want people to come and talk to me if there's anything they're worried about," said the head. "Even things that may seem silly, you know, it doesn't have to be large, obvious things. Exams and stuff, anything."
"Yes," said Clara.
The phone rang. The head picked it up and said no, she hadn't, and yes, she'd be along as soon as she could and tell them to wait. She put the receiver down and said, "It wasn't like you, Clara, was it? I mean, there are a few people one wouldn't be all that surprised if they suddenly did something idiotic or unexpected, but you aren't really like that, are you?" Clara agreed that she wasn't really. "I'll be writing a note to your mother, and if you have an urge to do something like that again, come and have a talk to me first, right?" The head smiled, and Clara smiled back. That was all, evidently. Clara got up and left. As she was closing the door, she saw the head looking after her, not smiling now, her expression rather bleak.